Thanks for tuning in to your Day Off Podcast, hosted by your boys, Corey and Tony.
I think by the end of today, I might have another best friend.
They're committed to making you fall in love with the hair industry, one podcast at a time.
You're going to grab a lot of information.
Yeah,
you're going to learn a lot.
Presented by Hair Industry.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is it.
Your Day Off Podcast will begin after a word from our sponsors.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Big announcement. Presley Poe and Friends is back 2022, April 2nd, April 3rd in the state of Maryland. We have Presley coming in and her friends, her Jacob Kahn, Lisa Carello, Patty Plymeyer, also known as Queen of the South, Trevor Moots, Taylor Fade. So again, that's April 2nd and April 3rd. April 2nd, we're doing a happy hour with a demo from all of our artists, and then they're going to come and do a mix and mingle, so you'll be hanging out with all the artists that evening. April 3rd is an educational-filled day. We have a la carte classes that are available. Jacob's doing a couple hands-on classes. Presley's going to do a Vivid's class. Patty is doing a hands-on braiding class. Lisa Carello is going to show you all that you need to know about textured hair, and Trevor Moots is doing his amazing barbering. All the information is available on PresleyPoeandFriends.com. Big shout out to our sponsors, of course, the Sharon and Charles Reiser, the Temple Paul Mitchell, which is in Frederick, Maryland, which is where we're going to be holding the event. Kaiser Prof Beauty, once again, they stepped up so we could help support you guys. They stepped up for Shadow Presley Poe. We have the Handsome app. If you guys haven't downloaded the Handsome app, it's a must. They're going to be covering the weekend, and they have some incredible giveaways that are coming up that weekend. If you're going to be at the show, Handsome has shears that they're giving away. They have brushes they're giving away, blow dryers that they're giving away. They're giving a lot of stuff away that weekend. Big shout out to Hatoro Hanzo shears. They're one of our sponsors. They're going to be in collaboration with the Handsome app. They're going to be giving away some shears. And of course, our friends at Salon Scale, they always step up for the industry, and just big thank yous. And once again, thank you for stepping up for the industry. So again, April 2nd, April 3rd, PresleyPoeandFriends.com. All the information is there. Trust me, you're not going to want to miss this live in-person event. Come back to school with us, y'all. Hey, welcome to your day off. My name is Corey, and of course, I'm sitting with my best friend, Tony. What's up, buddy?
What's going on, brother?
Nothing, man. I'm super excited about today's podcast.
Oh, man, we're having a blast, and we haven't even started.
I know. We just chatted for about the last 10 minutes, and we shared a bunch of laughs, so I hope we didn't wear out all of our laughs already.
Yeah, we're going to be like, soon you're going to like, welcome to your day.
Nothing to say, it's funny. It's funny. I was talking about this not too long ago, but the reason that we have the opening that we do was because, one, when we first did our first podcast, we never introduced ourselves, right? And then people were like, well, who are you guys? One. And then two, it's so weird once a mic turns on that your brain goes to a different spot. And we couldn't figure out what the very first word we were going to say is. So we do that opening just so we can have conversation, essentially.
Yeah, and really, it's for me and you.
It's well, there's so many jokes that are just for me and you in this podcast that we get to enjoy time and time again. So so today our client is, God, I'm going to mess his name up. Drew Schaefering. Did I get it?
Yep.
You got it.
Drew said I got it. Cool. So it's with Drew Schaefering. He's done it all in the industry, from he hasn't even been in the industry that long, not compared to our old faces, but he's done a lot, dude.
Dude. I mean, in a short amount of time, I mean, he moved quickly. You know what I mean?
That needle is pegged, huh?
Yeah. He, I'm not going to spill anything that we talked about earlier, but you know, he gave a little time frame when he started with L'Oreal. I'm like, man, I just figured out I still needed to be an apprentice. No, you know, so I'm really curious about this guy and you know, how he did what he did and as quick as he did.
Me too, man. I'm way interested. Should we get in?
Yeah.
So, Mr. Drew, welcome to your day off.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Absolutely, man. Thanks for hanging out with us and sharing a couple of laughs with us. So Drew, where are you from originally?
I'm originally from St. Louis, Missouri, where I grew up, kind of went to all the school, primary school, private high school. And then I found myself on a soccer scholarship studying business in the Carolinas at two different schools before I retreated back to St. Louis and eventually got into hair.
Where did you go to school in the Carolinas?
Yeah, I spent a year at Charleston Southern University down there. And then I transferred to a school kind of right outside of between Charlotte and Asheville called Gardner Webb. And loved it out there. Very different. I mean, my last school was a one stoplight town. So it was literally like it was built around the campus and it was a great experience, but time expired there.
So you played soccer there?
Yeah, I did. I was fortunate enough to have soccer pay for my schooling. And I was planning on going and playing soccer in Europe. So I ended up studying a few different languages and just kind of, you know, a few injuries and getting by more on my hard work than talent. I realized the next level wasn't going to get easier when everyone else was working as hard as me and they were more talented than me. So that's when I kind of said, okay, on to the next thing.
So hold on. I need a little
soccer players, man. They have endurance, brother.
I know.
Running. Yeah. I have a son-in-law. He played soccer all through high school and stuff. And so we all ride the Peloton and we're all thinking we're getting it. He jumped on the Peloton and he smokes. I'm like, how is that possible? I mean, he's like on a whole new level.
He's average too, bro.
But still, I'm like, yeah.
Soccer player, right?
I think it's just so much oxygen in your body and blood. And it's like, this dude, man. I'm like, man,
just go. So Drew, like if you're like if you graduate college and you're a basketball player, you'll go to Europe and you'll kind of like work on your skills before you come back to the US. Well, it must be opposite. Like, I mean, if you were planning on going to Europe, that must have been like a harder trail. Now, I don't know what I'm trying to, you know what I'm trying to say? It's not like the minor leagues, like the NBA uses it as.
I think, you know, there are different levels. I certainly wasn't being drafted into the English Premier League, which is like the top tier league in the world. I was going over there to play in Germany at a few different options with the hope of doing a business kind of like apprenticeship or work where they would sponsor me. I would play for this team, get some business insight. And if it went well, you know, maybe move up in the ranks. But I think, you know, some of these leagues are on par, maybe slightly below where the MLS is talent wise. So it's not necessarily going to the farm teams, but it wasn't going to the top leagues, unfortunately.
Yeah, yeah. I have a sweet mate from, she's from Kansas City and she's a huge, her grandfather played for the Cardinals, St. Louis Cardinals back.
Oh, good people.
Yeah. He played for the minor leagues for St. Louis, but she grew up, she's still a huge Cardinals fan. Like if they're in the playoffs, I mean, it's playing in our suite as we're cutting hair.
Yeah. People who are St. Louis Cardinals fans just bleed blue or bleed red. Obviously we all bleed red, but you know, there's a saying for that.
Cardinal red. We'll call it Cardinal.
Yeah. Cardinal red. The St. Louis Blues fans say that they bleed blue, but yeah, even though I think the farm team's in Louisville, Kentucky, and there's just such a strong culture of St. Louis Cardinals in St. Louis. Once you're a fan, you're just diehard.
Huge.
That's it. Exactly. Yeah. She's a Nats fan until they play the Cardinals, you know.
Exactly.
Like, it's all about the Cards, you know.
Like, she's a hairdresser. She's a Cardinals fan, but dude, she knows every player. She knows every, like, she goes to Florida for the training camps.
Wow.
She is legit. I'm like, she blows me away. I'm like, I can't even, you know, I like sports, but I can't even have a conversation because I haven't talked about it. That's how in-depth she is.
Right.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So you get back to St. Louis and then what happened then?
Yeah. So I was actually, I studied business marketing with a minor in finance and I was interested in money and how making money works. And I always had this like business mindset. And then I was offered a position with a financial advisor, a friend of ours, like the week before, like Thursday, Friday. Come Monday, he said, give me your answer Monday morning, think about it on the weekend. I go down to my dad's office, who had his office in the basement of our home. And he looks up and he's like, so what'd you decide? And I said, I think I'm going to take the job. It took me an extra year to graduate between transferring schools. And I felt like I was already a year behind everyone else who had gotten out and gotten on their path. I said, it's time for me to grow up, get this big job. And I'll never forget. He takes his glasses off, sets them down, looks at me, says, don't take that job. He said, you have something special. You have something different. Go back to follow your passion, which a part of the story I skipped is I had started cutting my own hair in high school, which led to cutting friends' hair, teachers' hair, and then doing it all through college. So I had this desire to be creative. I had this passion or fascination with hair. And because of my dad, he pushed me that direction, said, look, man, you can live here as long as you want. Go back to cosmetology school, try it. If it's not for you, that job is still going to be there. So I was like, okay, fuck it. Let's do it. And day one of school, I was like, I'm onto something. And fortunately, after having that college experience, after having the work ethic of being an athlete my entire life, I was just like, let's go. I'm setting it on fire. So I was no nonsense. I think I was the fastest person to graduate that they legally could allow me to graduate speed-wise. And from there, I took a job at a good friend of mine's salon who he is one of my most important people in my life and in my world, first mentor in the industry. And he really supported me. I didn't do a proper apprenticeship. Basically, I would show up and he said, you're going to watch me when you're not busy. And I'm going to feed you blow dries and we're just going to trial by fire. We're just going to throw you in the deep end. And very quickly, you know, I was, you know, kind of shitting my pants getting these blow dries because you don't learn really that much in school. You know, you learn some basics, you learn to pass tests, but I wasn't being trained. I was just devouring education on my own time, watching as many back in the day DVDs because they weren't on YouTube. And he took me to a class here in New York with L'Oreal Professionnel because that's who his affiliation with the salon was at. And the artist doing the class kind of was watching me. One of the assistants was watching. They came up to me after the 2 days and they're like, hey man, have you ever thought about being an artist with a brand? I was like, no, I don't really know what that is. I was thinking like the way a snowboarder sponsored, you're going to send me a bunch of shit and put me on marketing stuff and right. Have kind of this like kind of cool thing. So I said, all right, dude, let's try it. So I send an audition tape. They fly me back up to New York to audition in person. And next thing you know, I'm going out to Vegas for their national convention as one of their fast-tracked artists between the beginners and the high end. So I had this like year, 2 years of attending all of the beginning trainings, getting all of the wealth of knowledge, plus all of the advanced trainings with the top artists. So I was just like a sponge. And from there, my, you know, just exponentially allowed me to grow and just become faster and faster.
Well, kudos to your mentor putting you in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty amazing. And kudos to your dad. I mean, because yeah. You know, I don't know too many dads that you know what, don't, you know, especially if you're pursuing a business degree in business and saying, you know what, follow your passion. You know what I mean? Kudos to your dad.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's such a special story to me. And even when I tell the story, like if he listens to this podcast, he'll get teary eyed and choke up at it because I've asked him since then. I was like, what was it that made you push me that direction? He just said it was just a gut feeling. And the fact that so many fathers, you know, I feel like telling your parents you're going to go to beauty school is kind of like, it can be kind of shameful. You know, it's almost like beauty school dropout. You're not going to do anything with it. And, you know, for him to have that belief in me and knowing my work ethic and how kind of ambitious I am to take that risk and push me away from the safe position or safe journey was really, really meant it means the world to me. And it kickstarted everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a unique story. We've done over 350 episodes and, you know, almost everyone that we talk to, like there is a little bit of shame in there. There wasn't always this great, there's not always that great support to do it. And like, you know, if you Google how much a hairdresser makes, like, you know, it's like minimal dollars, you know, it's under minimum wage kind of stuff, you know? So for like, your story is completely unique because you were encouraged, you know, and I'm going to assume your dad's not from the industry. Sometimes in the industry, we hear it. Right. We hear that encouragement, but never from somebody outside the industry especially with a college degree.
Yeah. Cause usually the parents are, you know, like, oh, don't do it. And then they end up proving the parents wrong and the parents become proud then, but never, usually not from the very get go. And you know, your dad's an awesome guy.
You know, what's amazing about your story too, is that we did a podcast a couple of years ago with Tabitha Coffee, and what Tabitha did is she had six mentees. So for a year, your story kind of reminded me of hers. Is like, you're getting all this education from the top educators in the industry, that she's allowed for these mentees to do as well. And she's doing it again this year with six more. But your story kind of reminded me of like, oh, that's kind of what Tabitha's doing and the opportunity for that. So, and, you know, if you're in school and you're getting out of school, go find the right salon. You know, it's not about heads. It's about getting the right education. You know, what pays off more in this industry than anything else in the world is experience.
Yeah. And, you know, having back to your point, Tony, having the right mentor is everything. And you can learn all the technical skill sets. You can learn all of the abilities and the foundation. But if you don't have someone who truly believes in you and also is willing to let you grow beyond where they're at so that they know one day you're going to leave and do your own thing, that is, you know, so important. It's also so rare. I mean, my mentor, 3.5 years into the industry, when I told him, hey, I'm moving to New York, he was just like, shit, like, of course you are. I knew that this was the route. I didn't bring you in so that I could keep you here and hold you down. I wanted everything for you and for you to fly and kind of grow on your own. So that's really rare. And that's why I initially even went with him, aside from being a family friend and even being at my birth. He just was like, this is for you. I support you. Whereas all the other larger, well-off salons in the area, they wouldn't have that same support for me. You know, they're there to make a money. It's more of a business mindset. And, you know, I chose wisely with that. And I'm very fortunate to have great people in my life.
I bet you his mentor was only surprised that he went to New York. I mean, sure, it was like New York or LA, right? Because I think you're in like St. Louis. Isn't that the track? You end up in LA or New York?
It seems like it for sure. But I started coming up to New York, working Fashion Week, like a year into it. And I was coming up probably almost every other month. And he would see me leave and then come back and almost be sad that I was back in St. Louis. And so it was just kind of it was just the cycle that was bound to happen, I think.
Let's talk about Fashion Week for a second. We have a good friend of ours that does Fashion Week. He manages hair. I don't even know what his title. He used to do, what's the TV show?
Project Runway.
Yeah, he used to do all the hair for Project Runway. So now, but now, you know, but he talks about the speed, you know, so like there's a lot of capable hairdressers to do the looks, but to be able to do the looks and at the speed that they need to be, that they need to be. Can we explore that a little bit?
Yeah. So I'll never forget. Like, so there's a French hairdresser. She's kind of a queen of hairdressing, Odile Gilbert. And she is my first experience in Fashion Week. And I'll never forget the same guy that I auditioned with L'Oreal to get the artistry position. Was back in St. Louis. He texted me. He's like, do you want to come up for Fashion Week? I was like, I don't really know anything about it. You know, I suck at hair still. He's like, come stay on my couch. You're going to sneak into the shows with me. Just do it. And his name's Joseph DiMaggio. Shout out to you, Joseph. And I get backstage. I get to the front and I look, they're like, what's your name? They're checking people in. And I look down at the list and I just point to some guy's name. I was like, that's me. And so they're like, cool, go ahead. So I get backstage and that's kind of, at the time, that's what you had to do. Like the hairstylist, the lead hairstylist loved that because it showed so much initiative. You're like, fuck it. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to do what it takes. But I'll never forget the first show I was doing. My hands didn't work that fast, much less comprehend what everyone was doing and then have the talent to be able to do it. And she was able to make things look so effortless and do things so fast that at one point, you know, when you're at Fashion Week, you're teaming up 2 to 3 people per look, which also speeds up the process. But a model sits down, there's 2 or 3 people holding products, sectioning, doing all the prep. And I was trying to do this model all on my own. And she eventually kind of came over and put her hand on my shoulder, said, you watch, you assist, you don't do hair. Then we'll talk after a few seasons. And that was like, oof, kind of a blow to my gut. I was like, oh, is she going to kick me out? Whatever. But even she embraced me so much in terms of like, you're young, you need to grow, you can provide value here, but watch. And what I learned really quickly is that as hairdressers, we have a system which provides reproducibility, consistency, all these elements behind the chair. When you're at Fashion Week or in any like situation like that, there's no time for excess movements. So it's like, if let's say you're pulling the hair back and you're slicking it back, you don't go through and smooth it all unless it needs to be smooth. You just put the product in, get right to it, and then you smooth it afterwards. And it's more about what is the most important thing that has to be done right now. And sometimes that's the right product. Sometimes it's emotion. Sometimes it's a technique. But every 30 seconds you waste when you only have 12 to 15 minutes tops per girl is just, you start to back up. And so you learn really quickly the importance of what's the focal point of the look.
Now, does the lead hairstylist, do you guys like muster up before, and are they like, here's the look, here's the feel of it, or what's like, what's the coaching of that?
Yeah. So usually like the day before, their agency or their booker manager will send out like the sheet that says, make sure you have all these tools, if they're specific tools. And that was another learn for me. They say, bring your kit. And I'm like, what's a kit? I've got scissors.
My hair school kit.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I show up with a little, you know, suitcase with some bobby pins, hair pins, random stuff. And then I see all these other people lay out this just onslaught of like they're going to war in hair. And I was like, oh, shit. OK, so that's what they're talking about. So they send out, you know, bring your kit where you're going to be. Make sure you have this special tool or these rollers because it's for the look. Because 2 to 3 days, usually, you know, within before the show, the lead hairstylist goes and does a test with the designer to create the look or looks, which then dictates what everyone's going to be doing. And then the morning of, after everyone, or the day of, when everyone's set up backstage, the first model that comes in, they're okay, gather around, we're doing the look, and they talk through the importance of it. Like, the parting has to be here. We're using this product, drag this hair back this way. We're going to set it and then make sure it looks like this. And the important thing with that is knowing what the look should be, because not every head of hair needs the same actions done to it. If you do the same exact thing on every girl, it might look slightly different, but you need to get it, achieve a similar result on everybody. So you definitely have, here's our benchmark. This is the goal. And then all the girls come flooding in. Everyone does the looks together. And the lead hairstylist just kind of like floats. Usually they generally don't sit at one chair and work. They're the conductor of the orchestra or the symphony. Right. And the first and second assistant are usually there really banging out hair, also floating with them. And there's been shows where either with the look dictated was a little bit tougher or beyond the skill set of some people. And the first and second assistant have to go through and fix everything. But maybe it's a look where all of the assistants, your job is to prep the hair to this point, and then these three people are going to finish every little detail to make sure it's working.
How many hairstylists are on set?
You know, I think I've done shows where it's usually between 12 to 25, and it all depends on the amount of girls. I mean, I got thrown into the deep end, and looking back, I didn't understand the brevity or the strength of what I was doing. Like, I was doing shows like Philip Lim, Rodarte, Jason Wu, some of the top designers and shows in New York at the time. And so there would be some shows where there was 50, 60, 70 girls. And so if you take that down and you're like, okay, 2 to 3 artists to at least finish 3 people, you got to have like 20 people for 60 girls minimum. So there's a lot. And there are some shows where the backstage is tiny and you're like on top of each other. And then some like other warehouse or bigger industrial shows where you get to spread out and it just becomes a whole production.
So when you would go back to St. Louis, I mean, what was the, were people trying to pick your brain, or were people jealous, or, I mean, how did, cause you know, here you are a young hairdresser, you know, you're in and out of New York now. And I'm sure you have a lot of people who've been in the salon for a while. Like, hey, what's up with this kid? Yeah.
Yeah. I think there's a combination of a few things. I think there's definitely some people who kind of, you know, you're always going to have haters. Some people be like, ah, you know, you just got the gig because of this. I certainly didn't think that I earned it based on my skill set or anything. I was just right place, right time, was able to put in the work and do what it took. But I think, you know, most other hairdressers, there was this, a sense of, tell me more. What is it like? There's always the, let me know when next season is. I want to join you. And I'm like, I don't have any power. I'm lucky to be on the bottom of the totem pole. And then I think, you know, with clients was the biggest thing, because all these clients are asking me, what are the new things? What are this? You know, tell me what designers you liked. And I was like, I'm so nervous back there. I'm shitting my pants. I'm just focused on not messing something up. I'm not paying attention to anything. Right. But definitely, you know, it gave me, for my clients in St. Louis, another perspective, which still to this day feeds me with my clients here in New York and in Brooklyn. When you're looking and seeing what's happening at the kind of genesis or the beginnings of trends with hair and fashion and the connection behind it, you then have a little bit more of an idea of, okay, where, how's this going to fit into the salon world? If it does, you can speak to it a little bit more. But above anything, it just gives you clout. It gives people this sense of, you are there doing it. whether that means you're a better hairdresser for them or not, they don't care. It's like, I get to go to a hairdresser who goes and does New York Fashion Week, and it's bragging rights for people.
Obviously you're putting off some type of vibe that, you know, cause your mentor in St. Louis said, you know what, I'm just going to throw you in a deep end. You go to New York, I'm going to throw you in the deep end. So there's something about you that's willing to say, you know what, throw me in the deep end and I'll be able to, you know, swim. And so half of that, a lot of times I think people get scared, right? Sometimes a lot of people let their fear maybe hold them back and not jump into the deep end and try to swim. But did you ever have that kind of fear? And how'd you overcome that if you did?
Yeah, you know, I definitely had that fear. I think the most important thing was having a few friends around me that said, just do it. We've got you. Like, you're not going to fall. We're going to be there with you. If transparency, I think if I would have gotten a random email from somebody to come to New York Fashion Week without a friend or a connection backstage, I would have probably been a little bit too scared to do it because I didn't know what I was doing. So it was really the support of my peers and being able to say, hey, you've got this, we've got you. And it was also going back to even auditioning for L'Oreal Professionnel. My mentor even one day was like, are you sure you're ready for this? Or do you want to wait a year and get, I was like, no, they asked, let's do it. And so I've always had that ambitious kind of crazy mentality of, if somebody says I shouldn't or couldn't do it, then it makes me want to try it even more. Mm-hmm. And even through the fear of, you know, I remember doing shows where my hands were shaking because it was such an important show and the lead was watching me and, oh shit, don't fuck this up. Don't mess up. Don't be that stylist. But you just got to work through that. And I think fortunately, whether it's my own natural instinct or support of people or some level of comfort has enabled me to just kind of keep digging in and going deeper into it.
Have you found a drill in your life?
You mean in terms of like a mentor or a mentee?
Yeah. Like someone that you're like that X has something and I want to support that.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there's a few stylists, a few from St. Louis, a few here in New York that just got out of beauty school that somehow there's a connection to it. And I find that they'll reach out and at some point, they might not ask for advice or help, but it's always offered. And to me, that's huge because it's my responsibility to keep helping people the same way that other people helped me. And I think the biggest challenge for me was to swallow that. What do I have to offer them? You know, who am I to be a mentor to somebody and say, I actually have a lot that I can share and ways that I can help. So whether it's having a phone call with someone who wants to get in the industry this week, helping a student just getting out of school land in the salon I'm in and taking him on photo shoots with me, reaching out to somebody in the Midwest who moved up to New York and kind of befriending them and just supporting and trying to help guide them in any way I can. And I think, you know, it can be time consuming. It can be a lot, but to me, that's really important because I wouldn't be here today without all the people who've supported me.
So when you moved to New York yourself, Did you already have, obviously you had relationships, but did you have friends or, cause I mean, from St. Louis to New York, that's a huge move.
Yeah.
You know, did you have support or the friends that kind of you were able to lean on, or you just went for it?
I think both. I had friends, but I didn't have the type of friends you like go out and party with. I had industry friends and in the line of work I was doing.
What industry are you in? Because our industry is filled with the party.
Let me rephrase that. I didn't have the time to go out drinking and partying with my friends. And most of my industry friends doing set work or working in salons, sure, we'd go have drinks or, you know, lunch after a show. But when I moved to New York, I also set myself up to make sure I wasn't going to fail. Moving to New York to a city that's, three or four times more expensive in a lot of your costs, I was deathly afraid of, I'm going to move there, blow all my money and fail. So I kept going back to St. Louis every between 4 and 6 weeks, working for 4 days, 16-hour days to make my money so that I knew when I was in New York doing my hustle, I wasn't going to be wondering how am I going to pay my rent. And what that did is between that working with L'Oreal Professionnel, it just created this cycle of just constant workflow. And I think for probably 2 or 3 years, I really didn't take advantage of the social element of networking and connecting with other people in New York because I was so busy on my own grind and in my own schedule. So looking back at it, it served its purpose, but I had some friends and connections here. I had people that knowing they were here, I could reach out to if I had a problem, which made me sleep better at night, but they weren't in my day-to-day life. They didn't work at the salon I started at. They weren't on the road with me. They weren't flying back to St. Louis with me. So it was, a lot of it was done on my own, and it was, let's say, probably one of the more lonely times in my world, but I was on a mission to, hey, I got my friends in St. Louis. I can see when I'm back there. I got my work that's going on, and it was just a focus and determination to make this work.
So you're just keeping busy, so you didn't know all that, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Do you, when you go back to do you still make it back to St. Louis?
Yeah, I usually, probably up until 3 years ago, I was going 4, 5, 6 times a year. I don't go back there for clients anymore. I always have special requests, but when I go back, it's just to see family. And then, family takes up the lion's share of it. And then I have a few friends that they're always texting me like, hey man, cool of you. I see you back in St. Louis. I didn't get the phone call. And I'm like, man,
you have a big family?
I wouldn't say big, but very close. I have two parents back there. I have a brother, sister-in-law, and now two nieces, and then some extended family, some uncles, and my mentor, every time I go back there, I always have to see him, have dinner, drinks with he and his wife. So it's more important to me to have the quality over quantity when I go back. And that is something I'm working on, is reconnecting with all my good friends and homies back there. So I think what I'm going to start doing is just saying, hey, I'm going to be at this cafe from 10 o'clock till 4 o'clock. Show up if you want to talk. That's all I got.
That's the play right there, man.
Yeah.
That's smart, actually. Yeah.
I have to imagine that, like, your St. Louis mentor is just tickled with your success and what you've done. And like, he must have, I wonder if he's living vicariously through you a little bit. Like, was this, did he mean this to be his track? But he goes, well, I can send Drew.
Well, we've talked about that a lot, and we even, Matthew and I had him as a guest on our podcast in the first season. And he always talked about, he had a desire to reach for New York, but his family and his wife came first. And, he made sacrifices that a lot of us have to make in order to provide for your family, to keep things steady. And I think he definitely does have an element that lives vicariously through me. And when we get back together and talk, he's always one, what's going on with Crux? How's the fashion world? How are your clients? He loved that I stepped back behind the chair 2 years ago, 2 days a week. And I think it definitely does. It feeds a part of him, because he still sees all of his old ladies and, younger women as well, but they're always like, how's Drew doing? So I think that there is an element of that keeps feeding him.
That's awesome. That's really
cool,
right? Yeah. Yeah. Cause my family's super close too. And it just gets bigger and bigger, because even people aren't blood related, they become family. In my family, everybody gets adopted. So pre-COVID, we would have a barbecue in my backyard. There'll be 60, 70 people in the backyard.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's all family.
Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. It's pretty, he's got a very special family with that. I mean, they adopted me when I was 16 or something, it's like, his cousins certainly refer to me as cousin,
His daughters and, everybody's niece. And it's family. Yeah.
That's special. That's a lot of love to go around.
Yeah. Dude, it's awesome. The love is definitely the magic word there. So you said that you went back behind the chair a couple years ago. Was that COVID related? Was that because you weren't getting work elsewhere?
Yeah. I hadn't been behind the chair in a salon in probably 6, 7 years. I worked at a salon for 6 months when I moved here almost 10 years ago. And I stepped out of it because I realized I don't want to move to New York to do the same thing I was doing in St. Louis. And
that's ballsy though, bro.
It's a tough call to make, because, thankfully I had work as an educator that was able to bring in enough income to make me do that move. And to focus on the fashion world, I think the most misconceived idea about doing fashion and editorial is you don't make money for the first 3, 5+ years, and you're working for free or you're assisting. And even now to this day, I still do as much work for free as I do getting paid in that industry. So
I'm gonna stay there for just a sec, Drew.
Okay.
Because I think what's happened, you know, certainly with like the Instagram world and our industry and stuff, that everybody's getting paid immediately. But what you said is so true. I mean, it's a three to, that's part of the grind, you know, and it's part of the grind is that, and like I said earlier on, is that nothing pays in this industry like experience. And sometimes you pay for that experience.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a tough go. And I think also the deeper you want to go into it, the tougher it is. So for example, one of the most recent hairstylists I assisted a lot, he's at the top of the game in the fashion world. His first assistant is just now leaving. And I met her on his team 6 years ago. So she's been his first assistant traveling side by side for 6 years. Now she has a salary she worked on, was able to do all of these cool things that are, you know, a lot egotistically great, but also experientially, you know, and making connections. And she's just now getting ready to go out on her own and with an agency. So she's just now at the bottom of the, you know, not at the bottom, she's starting higher up, but she's at the totem pole starting to work her way up now. And this idea that people are able to move here and work on editorial and say, I did an editorial, I should get paid, that you get paid off of the jobs that hire you because you did a cool editorial, or because you do something really, really cool and they see your talent. And that's been a tough thing for me to learn as well, because when I go work for a company doing education, when I work with a client cutting their hair, you're getting paid. But all these other things, you have to start to keep saying yes to the things that you see a future in and start saying no to the things that may be fun or cool, but it's not going to serve your greater purpose with it. And that's a balance that you don't really find until you're in it. And like just this past week, I did a photo shoot for a new Italian magazine with a photographer that I love working with. He's one of the coolest creative people. And I had to look at him like, okay, here's another day of my life where I'm not getting paid, where I'm putting out a 12-hour day with the hopes of the images that we produce are going to be so impactful, so cool, seen by the right people that I'm going to get a job from it in the future. And it's going to start to kind of snowball from that. So it's almost like assisting in the salon. You got to go assist. You go through your learning process. You just don't have somebody teaching you directly unless you're assisting someone full time. And you just got to kind of keep grinding at it. Hope that it's going to pay off someday.
That's a good one.
Great advice.
You know, totally. So you mentioned Crux. What's what kind of walk us through what Crux is and how you started it, why you started it, all that stuff.
Yeah. So I mentioned, I became an educator like 6 months into my career, and probably the first 8 years, I found what I call like collecting dots. Like you notice something and you're like, I'm putting that in my back pocket. And what I mean by that is every time I was on stage or in front of a group of people, the first things that they ask, it's not about the haircut. It's what comb are you using? What clips are you using? What scissors do you like? And, you know, being a tool geek and kind of wanting to try everything out, I was in the process of creating some curriculum for L'Oreal Professionnel and realized, yes, tools make all the difference, but there's a lot of gimmicky stuff out there. And I realized that I never had a connection to anything I held in my hand more than the job it did. And as artists and creatives, we are so emotionally polarized and emotionally driven, charged, that I looked back at my own career as an athlete. And when I would lace up the David Beckham soccer shoes, I would feel like I could run faster, I could kick better. And a tool never really did that for me. So I was kind of looking at, okay, there's an opening in this market for a different type of hair company or a different hair brand. And I wanted those tools to represent a connection between the fashion world that the hair industry is so connected to, but also the emotional spectrum of each hairdresser. So when you pick up the Crux comb, it has an emotional feel to it. Physically, it represents something that is creatively charged, and it's different from everything else out there. So what turned from the canvas roll kit was my first idea, because I didn't like all the scissor cases I had. Started making prototypes, found the right connection, just asking people, and it turned into a bigger idea, and it's continuing to grow. So at the moment, it's a hair-inspired company that makes professional tools for stylists. And it's also branching into the consumer market with products that are different or unique, because the whole brand ethos aside from the emotionally charged heaviness and darkness and then light and, you know, ethereal feel of it all, it's about doing stuff to minimize the bullshit and get back to what's important. And for me, I always looked at so many tools and products that have come out to make a sale. They're driven by marketing teams. There's one little element that's changed. And to me, when I looked at, and I'll just use a certain clip, for example, several years ago, the big Gator clips that are big, you know, they work great. But for me, the process is really big. And if I'm watching two hairdressers, in this, I'm speaking from the eye and my personal experience. If I'm watching two hairdressers work, if I'm seeing somebody using things that are more minimal and putting the craft in the spotlight and the focus versus all these gaudy, colorful, different things that speaks more about the hairdresser than the work, my eye is drawn to the other, to the first one. So everything in the design of every tool is meant to be minimal. It's meant to be not loud, not standing out. And it's meant to put the craft and the emotion of what we do at the forefront of it. And then with the consumer products, we just launched our second hair and body oil last November. And that was a personal thing of mine. I was just during quarantine, I was experimenting with, I wanted something I could put on my body when I got out of the shower and put in my hair to help style it. But that also smelled the way of fragrance I would want to smell. I don't personally love a lot of hair product smells. I feel like they're too perfumey, too fragrancy. So I just started kind of breaking bad in my own kitchen, ordering all these different raw materials, and over 2 years found some formulas that I think work, and they're doing really well. They're being retailed in salons and offered on e-commerce and getting into some really good retail shops here in New York. So it's a interesting growth, and it's definitely been a slow growing journey. It's if I look at the stages of companies, there's surviving, striving, and thriving. And we're in the surviving period still. I thought it'd be cool to come up with a bunch of tools and think that people would just want to buy them and sell them without having business models and plans. And, you know, they're like, oh, cool, Drew did something, let's buy it. And, you know, it turns out that's not really the case. Definitely have a support group that's growing, but it takes a lot more of a business mind. And that, I think, is one of my greatest challenges right now, is balancing my creative side of me and the business side of me, and as the CEO of everything.
I don't think I've ever heard of an oil where you can put on your hair and your body at the same time. You know, that fascinates me, actually. I think I'm going to order some.
What
kind of oil is it?
So the first one I came out with, which I'll send you guys some. It's marula, grapeseed, avocado, and argan oils. So it's all natural cold pressed oils. And the fragrance is, so it's a little bit heavier, very rich in moisture. And that's the one a lot of men like for their beards. I use it on my body. It's a little bit heavier for my hair, but it works well for higher curl formations, coarser, thicker hair. Then the second oil is baobab, prickly pear, and evening primrose oil. So it's much more lightweight, thinner in viscosity. And the fragrance in that one is rose, oud, santal, yuzu, and hinoki. And the first one's smokier. It's like vetiver, palo santo, smoke, and yuzu. So hinoki. So there's definitely a yin and yang to it, you know. And when I started using it day to day, for me, it was kind of like a ritual, you know, having something that smelled heavy kind of grounds you in it. And it's kind of sets a tone when you get out of the shower. Every time you put it in your hair, it's kind of like a reminder. It's like when you hear, we were talking about concerts earlier. When Right. You hear one of those songs that you went back to, it kind of takes you to another place. And our olfactory senses are such a strong, they're the strongest sense that we have with connected to memories. So for me, it was equally important to have something that worked well on hair, to be able to use on skin. Also to have a ritual. A lot of my clients here in Brooklyn are beauty gurus or influencers, and they're using it as like the gua sha, I think I'm pronouncing it right, gua sha, like all these face rolling things, and using it in like bath rituals. And I have some more stuff coming out with another kind of ritual spiritual company soon. So it's multi-layered. And for me, it was about what is something we can take and get rid of all of these other things and bring it into one and make it the best version of it to provide those people who are really going to appreciate it and see it as something new and unique instead of just another thing to sell.
I love it. So you're niching it down essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. Just cut all the fat out, get rid of it.
That's pretty cool. So did it started off as a tool company and then you're like, wait a sec, I think I can make a wet product as well.
Yeah. So it started off just selling tools to professionals. And I shouldn't say just, it started off selling tools to professionals, and we're still marketing, or we're still going that direction. I've moved all of my manufacturing from Asia to now Mexico to bring it back to North America. And we're currently working on prototypes to add more tools in the lineup while also kind of exploring this other thing, because again, this was a personal product I was making for myself that everyone else was commenting and loving. So I was like, well, let's try it. And, you know, who knows how that will grow and work. But I think even in the brand messaging, that can be tricky, how to promote to both sides. So it's definitely a unique company that I think a lot of people can relate to, whether you're inside the hair industry or out of it.
That's cool, man.
Yeah, that's brilliant.
So, hey, how long ago did you guys start your podcast? And, you know, welcome to the podcast space.
Thanks. Thank you. We started it last year. So Matthew and I, we had another project that we were working on. And it was a travel show. I don't want to speak too much to it because it's still in the works, but we had a docu-series we were working on that would involve us traveling around the world and some great networks like Netflix, HBO. They were all interested in it. And then 2020 lockdown happened, and that was just no longer an option. With everything rising back up, the kind of the temperature has changed. The market is a little bit different. So last year we said, well, we can't travel and pursue this project exactly. What is something else we can do to create value to help build steam for it? So we created The Strands That Bind Us, and the whole premise of the Love podcast. You, thank you. Yeah.
Met you or Matt?
That's me. Yeah. And even the artwork on the cover are paintings that I did of just different hair. And that's part of like, that's why Matthew and I work so well together. We start talking about an idea and I have we're yin and yang again. Like I have a very different side of me than he does. He's more of logical, plan this out, big picture this. And I get into more of details and a different element. And we said, okay, we can't go anywhere. So let's start a podcast and talk about stories about this fabric we have on our head that we're all connected to. And our goal for it wasn't to promote it and focus just on the professional hair industry. There's a lot of great podcasts out there, hence like yourselves. We wanted to tap into a different side of it that shows, you know, the guest that we had on who was a cancer survivor, telling her story about losing her hair, wearing wigs, talking about her options that she didn't know that were out there or things she wished were out there. Talking to an activist and speaker who's also a model who's from an indigenous tribe in Canada about the importance of hair to her Native American tribe and how that is basically overlooked in schools and how their culture, hair is so important, yet young men with braids going to school are getting their braids cut off because they're not allowed to have long hair. To Dax being a celebrity who's just into hair, cuts hair himself, how actors have been perceived differently with different roles because of their hair. One of my best friends got hair transplants recently, and talking to him about that process and his emotional spectrum and what the actual process was like. It was terrifying to hear his experience. I think he said it was like a Chinese water torture or worse, or being plucked by a chicken from the back. And so it's, you know, we all have hair on our heads, and it means so much to cultures in different ways. And it means so much to each person in different ways. So, hey, let's invite people on and share people's stories and hope that it resonates and it hits home. And if it grows into something, awesome. And if not, it's a fun project for us to do some good.
You guys are going to keep doing it moving forward as well. Now that the COVID scare is slowing down a bit.
Yeah, that's the goal. I mean, our goal was to really kind of make this a priority. And we slowed down at the end of last year. We went through 3 seasons last year. So like 30 episodes or so, maybe more. And then he's getting married next month. Work is picked back up. And we we've been kind of in the planning stages of, okay, let's hit this pause button just so we make sure we're not spiraling in a direction we don't want to go. And, you know, again, quality over quantity for us, we'd rather have one come out a month that resonates than try to just fill it and then have there be too much minutia in it. So we're on a little bit of a hiatus and we're trying to get back next month.
That's awesome, dude. It's a really good podcast too. If you're hearing this, like, go check it out. I just this morning I listened to the Dax Shepard one, and like, first off, I'm amazed that you could have an hour long conversation with Dax Shepard about hair, and like, that's pretty much all you guys talked about. And I thought, he's so, like, I don't know what the word is, like, addictive or appealing, or like you just want to hear more from him. You know what
yeah,
I mean?
Like everything he says, you're just like waiting for what he's saying next. You're like, go on.
And it's about hair. And like, here's a guy who, like, you know, hosts like a car show, you know what I mean? And like, and he's talking about hair, and it was just I'm not going to hire him as a dentist. However,
right.
Dak has this ego that thinks that he can be a dentist. So I'll just leave it there. Listen, I
definitely
to the
won't let him do my knee replacement either.
No, he's not. Yeah. but, although, like, we kid, like, he seemed to have an understanding of hair and the fabric and the not so much like the fabric, but more of like how it should work on one's hair. And like, he seemed to have a pretty good idea of that.
Yeah. You know? I mean, he still cuts his mother-in-law's hair to this day.
Wow.
Which to me is just when I see somebody or hear somebody that just does haircuts without training, I love that because that's how I started. And to me, that just means that you are someone who likes to figure stuff out. And back to Dax's point of feeling he can watch a few YouTube videos and be a dentist and, you know, perform, you know, different surgeries. I love that about him.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating how much knowledge and information he has to share on the topic.
I love that he said that he cuts Kristen's hair, you know, Kristen Bell, his wife, and like she's a red carpet celebrity, man. You can't mess her up. Right?
No, you're going to be in the doghouse.
That's awesome, dude. I for real, I really enjoyed the podcast. I'm definitely going to pick up a couple more episodes too. It's really cool. So, I almost called you Dak. So Drew, where, how can people find you or locate you or, you know, get in bed with Drew?
Yeah. So, see, we're in bed with Drew. Easy, guys. All right. So, on social media, it's at Drew Schaefering. So it's DrewSchaefering. And support for Crux as well would be appreciated. It's Crux Brand on all social media. It's CruxeBrand or CruxBrand.com. The Strands That Bind Us podcast, as well as on social media on Instagram. And you can find me kind of cutting hair here in Brooklyn, around the country, doing anything. If you are an artist and would love to expand your artistry and your creativity specifically, Crux has a workshop that we do called Crux Abstract, where it's 2-day event and 75% of it, we don't touch hair. We use other artistic mediums to get different synapses firing and different emotions going to then go back to hair with a different perspective and a greater awareness of how we work.
Bro, I love that.
Yeah. And as a salon, I mean, you have, is there a way to, if someone wanted to carry your product, do they?
Yeah. Absolutely. So if you want to carry the oils, just reach out to, you can send Crux a DM. So at Crux Brand on Instagram, or even go on the website, cruxbrand.com, and just send a chat message. We have a little chat box on there, send a message and I'll be the one replying to you.
So now that we're on the other side of this, like what's in your future? What's in Drew's future? What's in Crux's future and all that? Like, what's happening like this 2022?
2022 is all about incremental changes for me. You know, there's a great book called Atomic Habits where it talks about, you know, if you're steering on your path and you just make a 1 or 2 degree turn, that's going to change your trajectory forever. And for me, it's all about doing little things in my day to day that I can to make things better, whether that is bringing someone else on with Crux, adding more value to people who are in the community, bringing on another element to help me get more photo shoots, working with an assistant to help up the quality and the game of that, to even in my chair in the salon. And it's about being present with where I'm at. You know, I like to wear many hats. I like to think of myself as a good Swiss Army knife instead of a sniper rifle. And it's important to focus on where I'm at in that moment. So how I can continue to add more to it without taking up more of my time. And it's just all through little dial turns and element changes.
Oh, that's gorgeous, man. Yeah. Hey, thanks for hanging out with us.
Hey, this was great.
That was a quick hour.
Dude, you ain't kidding, man. We flew through it, right?
Yeah.
So, Mr. Drew, thank you very, very much for joining us on YouTube.
Thanks for listening. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support the podcast, share it with friends, give us a rating, and drop a review. To listen to all the latest podcasts, please subscribe from your favorite podcast outlet. And to stay connected on and off the show, you can follow us at Hairdistry on Instagram and all other social media platforms. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time. Peace and love.